Welcome to LOA Today. I'm Walt Thiessen. With me today, the millionaire coach of millionaire coaches, Daniel Mangana. This is your daily dose of happy. We are so happy you decided to join us today. Our friend Alex is a little under the weather dealing with another in that long series of medical issues that she's been dealing with, but we've got our thoughts and prayers going out to her. So Alex, if you're tuned in, we're thinking about you and we're looking forward to having you come back and share your energy because our guest today, Sherry Lee Myers. Sherry, I got to tell you, Alex has like the most amazing energy, especially with Daniel, the two of them together. I've said this many times, but when the two of them get going, I can't even get a word in edgewise because these guys just like take over the energy sphere. It's just an amazing
thing. That's great.
But we're missing Alex today for sure.
That's wonderful. I can just imagine. Yeah.
Well, you don't have to imagine. You can actually subscribe. No, that's another topic.
As a matter of fact.
So there you go. So anyway, Sherry Lee Myers has one of the most interesting topics we've had to address in a long, long time because she's involved in a couple of projects, including a movie project that addresses the topic of women dealing with prison. This is a really interesting topic. And it has massive ramifications because there are so many people today, female and male, dealing with both being in prison, what happens once they get out of prison, the various issues that surround all that kind of thing. And I think we kind of forget everybody everybody is experiencing what it's like to live life within a realm of the law of attraction, within the realm of what we generically discuss here in a spiritual way. Because it plays a direct role in all of our lives. And it's especially harsh and true for people who deal with this kind of reality. So I'm glad we're talking about this. First of all, Sherry, thank you for joining us on the program today. How'd you get involved in all of this?
Well, I am a screenwriter. And I've been writing for, 30 years. And it's plays and screenplays and I have also been a political activist and I worked a lot on elections. And then I worked a lot, actually on campaigns for certain candidates that I was very much in support of. So the piece of it that is the writer piece really, really, really wants things to land somewhere and make a difference. Mm-hmm. That's my life. I mean, I really want to inspire people and make a difference wherever I can. With this film that we're producing called Angel Lady, which I was the first script I ever wrote 30 years ago after the harmonic convergence, this thing happened and we took this idea that there was a glitch on a TV that people interpreted as an angel. We took that idea and we put it into a story. And 30 years later, after numerous producers, different locations, different iterations, we have now landed and are going to be shooting this year.
Wow. Talk about a long-term dream turning
into reality. Yeah. So it is a lifelong dream. And it's also, though, so great to understand timing. And to really trust timing. I'm going to give you an example. We are on a location scout. We're going to be shooting in Las Cruces, which is a border town, on the edge of New Mexico and Mexico. And it's not a little border town, but where we're envisioning and where our movie takes place is in a trailer park outside of Las Cruces. And we have this young woman and she's a mom. She's the mom of a teenager and she has made, she's made a lot of mistakes. Well, the other part of it is that she's had a really very hard life. It grew up hard, a lot of abuse, a lot of not great things in her life and not a lot of self-esteem. And she got into actually being a card sharp, a con person. And with this slightly older guy and they had this partnership. So she was basically conning people for a good part of her adult life until she got busted. And her kid went into foster care and our girl did two years. Now she's out and she's really eager to start her life over. And what she's facing are all of the brick walls and the mental brick walls and the emotional trauma that she's been carrying and has yet to heal. Because one of the things I love to do as a triple Scorpio is like, I love to dive really deep into the research. And just recently though, 30 years later now, I'm finally understanding what I wrote about a woman coming out of prison. Intuitively, I did the right thing, giving her that alien feeling of alienation and the problems. But now after reading this book, The Slumber Party from Hell, about a woman's 7-year experience inside Perrysville Prison outside of Phoenix, I'm beginning to grasp the reality of it and the big picture of it and where my activism is like, wow, we've got something we can help here. We can help to raise awareness about the difficulties everybody experiences on reentry. Male, female. Women are having a really rough time right now because they come out in their moms and their breadwinners. 80% of the women who are coming out of prison are moms, and 85% of them are the breadwinners, and they don't have a job, and they don't have any money, and they don't have any credit, and they don't have anything. And they're given $50 that they earned working 15 cents an hour. That's all the money they have, and they have all these things that they have to do just to stay out of prison again. Okay, so that's the situation so our girl, Ella, lands in this little trailer park, and she has all these things she has to get together, keep together for her life, but she's not making enough money. Mm-hmm. I mean, she's a waitress. She's not making enough money. There are a lot more expenses. You've got to pay for your probation practically. So, and she has this genius son who's a teenager, and he's a little bit of a nerd, but what he is he's got this, he's like passionate about architecture and sustainable architecture and creating living units for people who are homeless. You know, and he's really got this big heart. He's got this big dream, and he's been accepted into an architecture program, a summer architecture program, like outside of Chicago. And she's dying for him to go, but he doesn't have a scholarship and they don't have the money. And that's how the movie opens. She's waitressing. He's been accepted into her program. They've got this huge challenge about them. How are they going to attract? How are they possibly going to manifest $5,000 when you don't have anything?
Especially when you have that background, because in that background, there's a mindset that's involved. There's a mindset involved in everything, right? I mean, all of life is about mindsets. Yeah. And the mindset that someone going through that experience has, I mean, there's got to be tons of baggage attached to that mindset. Trying to get into what we would consider to be a happy, positive mindset and stay there, that's going to be like a huge challenge for somebody like that. It's going to be an overwhelming challenge. And chances are they have all that stuff that's kind of hitting them over the head over and over and over again as the old tapes play in their heads, and you know, the past experiences keep coming back to them. And it just becomes like an endless momentum. And trying to reverse that momentum is really, really the hard part. So, yeah.
So fortunately for our girl, for Ella, she lands in this trailer court next to this woman named Doña Maria, who has the largest home and has got plants. It's not really a trailer. It's a real home. And she owns some of the trailers, and other people in the trailer park, everybody defers to Doña Maria because she's like the matriarch, and she's a curandera. So she heals people, and she has women over to hang out every day, and they cook for the community fridge, and they feed people. I mean, it's just a beautiful environment that they've created, and they take Ella in because she's there. Now, the thing that happens is that a glitch appears on their TV set. And when this glitch appears on their TV set, their old TV, Ella and Danny are you know, they're pretty sure they've got a broken TV, but Doña Maria says it's an angel. And word spreads, and this glitch on the TV becomes this angel. And our girl takes it on and becomes the angel lady, because now people are coming in with donations. and she solved her money problem. Prior to that, just the night before that, she had been kind of had a lapse, and she ran a poker game and conned the local bigwigs out of like $300. So something had to give. And this is what happened is the issue here, of course, is back to what her emotional baggage is, which is that she doesn't think it's an angel. There's no angel there for her. She doesn't deserve that. I mean, it's so out of her realm of possibility. There's that there's any amount of love and magic left in the world that would be for her. Her whole life is about doing the right thing for Danny. And if she can be the angel lady and impress the public and get away with it long enough to get together the tuition to get Danny to this thing, that's what she's going to do. Until, of course, the past arrives on her doorstep.
That's quite a premise for a story. And I can already see how it plays into real life situations. I think about people that I've known in my life who have been dealing with, you know, a whole range of stuff. I think about a gentleman I knew who was homeless, who I think he'd actually been to jail, not so much to prison, but he had been dealing with a lot of stuff related to how you take care of yourself when you get out. He had a mother who was a piece of work. I mean, not through any fault of her own, really, but she was just, she had some pretty messed up ideas about how you live life, and it just kept making life harder for him every time that she'd make a decision that was counterproductive. And throughout all that, he struggled so hard to get himself into a better place, to work his way through, to deal with the issues, put the issues behind him. Somehow, he managed to avoid becoming an alcoholic and a drug addict. I think he'd actually dealt with drugs for a short time, but he managed to put it behind him. But oh my goodness, the stuff that he had to go through. I just keep thinking about that, for instance. I think about somebody else I know. Well, actually, one of my former co-hosts, Joel Elston, who himself went to jail because he was a gambling addict. And wow. He stole money from his father's company, which was an insurance company selling insurance, embezzled from the company, ran off to Las Vegas, lost all the money, ended up homeless, ended up without a cent to his name, and ended up eating out of a dumpster in the back of a McDonald's on the strip in Las Vegas as a way to survive, and ended up going to jail because he got arrested for the embezzlement, going to jail for that, got out of jail, and fortunately for him, encountered somebody who taught him not only law of attraction, but how, you know, helped him turn his life around, which he ended up doing incredibly successfully, to the point where he created not one, but two centers for the treatment of people with gambling disorders, with gambling addictions, which is one of the hardest ones to create because, of course, gambling addicts don't have money, so they have no way to pay for treatment. Right. So he had to figure out ways to get money in to pay for the treatment for these people. He did it twice, and he's also worked with boys stuck in the foster care system, which is sort of an out-of-prison system that it's such a severe situation that they go through that if they don't, the goal is to get them adopted. If they can get adopted, they have a fighting chance. If they don't get adopted by age 18, it's about a 95% chance they will either be dead or in prison. And that's what the outcome is for kids going through the foster care system. He's actually rescued, by rescued, I mean found homes for 37 boys who are stuck in the system. And these weren't just any old boys. These were the boys that the system couldn't deal with. They were the most severe problems. They were the ones that the social workers were giving up on because they didn't know how to take care of these kids. They didn't know how to get through to them. And he would get through to them, teaching them law of attraction, teaching them how to take control of their lives. He ended up helping them find forever homes in 37 cases. Plus, he adopted three himself.
Can I meet him at some point?
Absolutely.
I really, I'm so touched by that effort. My God, you know, how much difference he's making. I'm going to take a little sidestep here and tell you about something that I did recently that demonstrated how willing people are to help. Okay. Mm-hmm. When you really ask for help, I wrote a book. First, I'm going to start this. I wrote this book because I needed to encourage myself. As you know, we've been working really, really hard 10 years on the film. I mean, not 30 years, but for the last 8 to 10 years since we came here to Louisiana. And then it got to a point in my life where it was like I needed to gather up all of the encouraging messages I had received after meditating. I'm just going to say channeled messages. And I put them in this book called It's Too Late to Quit. And part of the, and one of the things I thought about with this book and I thought about with the film and I just keep thinking about is there's a spiritual component of taking, of having a second chance, of giving yourself a second chance or a third chance. There is this healing that has to happen. And I think it has to do with unconditional love. I feel that because of the people, the angel channels I've worked with and the encounters that I've had now is that I really believe that what the system is missing is love. And I would like to bring forward some of the projects that people who are spiritually, you know, some spiritually minded projects to help people before they get out of prison and after they get out of prison because of the pain and the suffering doesn't stop. Now, the awareness of the pain and suffering of other people is what I'm really also interested in. You know, you kind of want to shake people, you know, especially people who look like me. And what I was able to do recently was there's this wonderful Facebook group in New Orleans. It's called Mutual Aid. Do you have Mutual Aid where you are? Mutual Aid. Mutual Aid. And it's based on this idea that it's people helping people. If you need something, you post it. If you can help them, you help them. And this young woman posted and she said, I have three kids. I have three children. I need cleaning supplies and I need food because Child Protective Services is coming Wednesday. And I have to show them that I can take care of my kids. And right now I have nothing. And she really did have nothing. All she had was a place to stay. So I put out the word on my Facebook group, Irish Channel Facebook group here in New Orleans. And I said, look, I'm going to gather up whatever you can give. We need to get food into the pantry, into the freezer, into the refrigerator for this woman because she doesn't have food stamps even. And she has three kids. Doesn't really have three kids. She has four kids. This is the list. This is like 15 people that day, 15 people signed up for me to pick up groceries, clothing, kids' books, toys, things that she needed. Some people went shopping, especially to get the things that she would need.
Wow.
Now, I believe that there's a way we could set up kind of like a welcome wagon. Like if somebody is going to be finally, you know, released from prison and they're starting their life over and all they have is $50, that's not going to help them. They need support. They need some friendly faces. Most of the time they don't have any support. Almost all the time they have no support. So part of my job is, you know, bringing this film forward is saying, you know, here's all these other things that the film is about. Here's all these things that the world is about. You know, it's not just, we're not just like a little Hollywood film here. We really are part of a movement to help people with reentry and to help shed light on this stupid prison system that punishes people and then keeps punishing them for the rest of their lives. It's completely wrong. Nobody gets rehabilitated hardly. So, you know, this is what really bothers me. I mean, I live in New Orleans. It's one of the greatest cities in the world. But there's way too much disparity between the rich and the poor. And there's not enough opportunity, but there are people who love the city and they love and they really want to help. They care. And that's what I'm finding here in my city. So I'm feeling that there's programs that we as producers on our website, we can promote these reentry programs as we find them around the country and bring light to them and help. And also we are going to offer screenings of the film as funders for organizations that are have to help that help with reentry. So that's what we're going to do.
Yeah, that's a huge project you got going on there.
Yeah, and it is. Yeah,
and it also occurs to me that what you're we talked about this before we started doing the program today, and we were kind of getting into it, and I was saying, well, geez, we should be really talking about this on the show. So let's talk about this on the show. The role that mindset plays in this is huge.
Yeah.
And I think it's almost completely underrated by most of society. I think more and more people in society are perhaps, well, maybe aware to an extent of the message that you're putting out, which is a really important one, that the one element that helps the most is love. I mean, you described it as unconditional love. To me, the term unconditional love is a redundancy because true love is always unconditional. If it's not unconditional, it's not really love.
Yeah.
But however you decide to label it, it's a major component because it's probably the best thing we can give to somebody else is that love. And more and more people are doing that. That's what I'm seeing. I don't know what you see in your life, but I see it a lot.
That's
I see
what
more
I mean.
And more love being given and not even necessarily knowing what to do. Not even necessarily knowing, you know, where to give it, but just by giving out the love, just by expressing it, just by feeling it, because there's a vibrational component to it as well. Mm-hmm. People actually benefit other people by sending out love. So I think that's a huge, huge part of it. I still also feel though that mindset is the other big part of the equation, so to speak, is part of the solution, because I think people don't truly grasp yet on as large a scale as they do where love is concerned, just how powerful mindset is, not only in one's own life, but also in influencing somebody else's life.
Yeah.
That's what happened with my friend Joel. My friend Joel, the reason he was able to make that big transition after he got out of jail was he encountered somebody who totally got mindset. And they were helping him. This was actually before law of attraction became a thing. So it wasn't even called.
Wow.
This was back in the 90s. And when he encountered this person basically taught him that whatever your mindset is going to directly influence what happens in your day-to-day life. And that if you can learn to take control of that mindset, if you can learn to redirect your attention to the things that are important to you and that are valuable and loving and joyful and just feed your soul and take your attention, more importantly, away from the things that are screwing you up, messing with your head, driving you into depression, driving you into anger and frustration and rage and all this other kind of stuff, you will start to change your life. And so he did. And he was young enough. He was in his 20s at that point. He was young enough that it was a relatively easy transition. It's never an easy transition for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
But the older you get, you have more baggage that you're trying to unload. So it gets a little bit more challenging as time goes on. So he was in a relatively good space from that point of view. Yeah. But from the point of view of what he was going through, it was a rough patch. It was a really rough patch. And so it also spoke to his courage, to his willingness to make a change in his life, his desire, his strong, deep-seated desire to make a change in his life, that he was willing to follow the teachings that this person gave him.
And of course,
it was absolutely the right person. Yeah, that trust.
Trust.
Huge. Yeah.
Trust. I think trust. Yeah.
Trust is what drives all of it.
Yeah. I wanted to share about that trust. I had a great trust moment. We were in Las Cruces on location scout, and we had been looking, you know, in Las Cruces and driving here and driving there and getting help and really kind of getting close, but not quite close to what we needed, which is a trailer court.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that night, and my husband had a terrible eye infection and he was suffering and it was like, oh my God, this is not great. So I'm up at 3 o'clock in the morning worried. It's like, what if we don't get this and we're going home the day after tomorrow? Oh my God. You know, and then one word came back, which was trust. One word came through and I thought, well, that's pretty loud and I better just hang my hat on that. And the next day, when you know, our first location that we're going to scout is a trailer park outside of Las Cruces. Now, Doña Maria is a curandera who has a beautiful home at the end of the trailer park. We go to this trailer park. Great guy owns it. his uncle, Uncle Bobby, has the beautiful home at the end of the trailer.
Of course
park.
He does.
And he's a curandero.
Ah, even better.
He's a healer. It's like, okay.
Yeah, that was guided.
And from that one location, we can get to the junior high and the church in another location. Like when you could ride your bike. I mean, this is going to save us so much money because we're going to be plunked in the same place. It was perfect.
And that's a big deal. I don't know if people realize that, but if you're not in the film industry, which I'm not, you have to see a lot of documentaries and so forth to pick this up. But locations are tough. They're tough to resolve. I mean, there are films that have taken months trying to find the right location. So when you found it on your first try, like, dang, that's pretty good.
Yeah, it was a big. It was the trust, wasn't it? I mean, it's like, yeah, it's coming. It's unfolding.
That's Don't very, very cool.
Panic. Don't yeah. panic. But back to these, you know, these folks getting out of prison without any tools. And in worse shape than when they went in. That's what one of the people I'm working with, a school chum from Delaware, Ohio, which is where I grew up. And she was 20 years a therapist in the prison at Marysville there in Ohio. Mm-hmm. She's a horsewoman and she wants very much to start a program that is akin to the program in Ocala, Florida, which is to train inmates how to become barn managers and to work with the horses.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So there's these wonderful solutions that take care of a whole host of problems if people can get their minds wrapped around this is a good time. And Nancy, and the point of all this is Nancy calls my friend Nancy Edwards, Dr. Nancy Edwards, calls this the invisible population. Mm-hmm. Of people who have been in prison and they get out and then they get back in, they can't vote, you know, they can't own things. They're
stuck in that loop.
Yeah, they're stuck in that loop. And the number of women who have been imprisoned in the last 20 years has risen 700%.
Has it really? Wow.
Because of drugs, because of the new drug laws. So moms are being locked up and their families are being split up and...
And in the long haul, I mean, I think we can all see there are shifts going on in this direction. I mean, just with the drug law, you mentioned drug laws; those themselves are already starting to shift. And
thank God,
you don't have to be a political activist to see it. It's pretty obvious that it's happening. But that doesn't mean that there aren't people who are already being affected by it. And so the question is, what are the best things we can do to help those people? Mm-hmm. That's really the real question. What can we do to help them? Because a large chunk of this, let's be honest, a large chunk of this is on them. It's not like they were. They played no role in it. They certainly played a role in it. But by the same token, they've gotten themselves into a place where it just seems impossible to get out of it. And that's where an outside influence can help. An outside influence can come in and say, well, yeah, you're dealing with this rough thing. And let's not mince our words. You're going through something that's terrible. But you don't have to stay there. You can actually get out of that. Let's see if we can figure out how to get you out of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because that's really what it comes down to.
You need strategy, and they need someone to care.
Yeah.
They need a community.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, that's a really important point. You just said the word community. I've mentioned this on the program a few times in a number of different contexts over the last few months. But there was a study that was done by Sean Aker. I don't know if you know who Sean is. He's one of the major players in the new positive psychology movement that has emerged over the last 20 years within the field of psychology.
Okay.
And he was at Harvard University. He was an undergraduate there. He also worked as a graduate student, and he was involved in setting up the first positive psychology department at Harvard. And of course, when you are in that field, you do studies all the time. So he did lots of studies. This one particular study that he did involved people who were trying to figure out how it is that people succeeded with whatever they were succeeding at or failing at. Mm-hmm. And of course, he's working with the Harvard population, and so all the Harvard students were involved in the study. Well, actually, about one-fifth of them were. It was a pretty big study.
Wow.
And so he made his study about trying to figure out what differentiates between somebody who succeeds at Harvard and somebody who burns out, because there's a lot of burnout at Harvard, a lot of failure, a lot of stress, huge levels of stress. I mean, suicides. I mean, there's like a lot of stuff that goes on there. Mm-hmm. And so he wanted to figure out, okay, so what makes the difference? And he did this long, really huge, long study for people to fill out. He had all these students filling it out. And he couldn't find any correlations except for the last question that he threw in. And he literally just threw it in at the last second. Like, I'll just kind of add this one in just because. Mm-hmm. It was a question about their connections, their social connections. Mm-hmm. And what he found was that the relationship between social connections and success of any kind, however you define success, was 0.7, which means that 7 times out of 10, whatever the level of social connections were, would directly predict mm-hmm. with accuracy how successful that person would be.
Wow.
And to give you an idea of just how big that correlates, 0.7 doesn't sound very big, but to give you an idea of just how big that is, by comparison, the correlation between smoking cigarettes and getting cancer is
0.44. Oh, wow.
So it's almost twice the correlation of cigarette smoking leading to cancer. That's how big this correlation is.
Wow.
It's huge. So when you mentioned connections, social connections, get enough social connections going for people, that alone is going to make major shifts in what their experience is, just because of the connections.
Mr. Walk, can you send me a link to that? Because I really want to read that study.
Yeah, sure.
What did you say the guy's name was again?
Sean Aker. He's one of the leading speakers, one of the leading spokesmen of the positive psychology movement. I think actually that one
what's
came
his book?
Out of his
What's book. His book called?
He has a few of them, but the one big book is called... what's it called? Happiness.
Is it the Happiness Advantage?
Happiness Advantage. Yeah.
That's great.
I've read that book. Yeah, because the reason why my guitar
right
is out
yeah,
of the
that's
box.
One of the things he talks about. Yeah,
is out of the box and right next to my desk. I walk past it to go to and from my desk.
Cool.
Is because of that book.
That's exactly what he teaches. His big thing was, like Dan, he wanted to play his guitar more often. And what he finally figured out was the reason he wasn't is that his guitar was sitting in the closet in a case, which made it so far away that he wouldn't do it.
Psychologically, it held him back.
Yeah.
Reducing resistance. I do that with so many things in my life now. Minimize the resistance, and you're going to have more flow going towards the thing.
Exactly.
But the thing about the community... Was that in the book Happiness Advantage?
I think what it was, there was a PBS special that he did in support of that book. In other words, when he was doing his book promotional tour, he was on mm-hmm. PBS. And if you can find that PBS special, I think there was actually a DVD made of it, so you might find it that way. But I think it was in that presentation that he told this particular story about the survey. I don't think it was actually in the book. I think it was
no, because I don't remember that. But this is really awesome. I'm going to look for it.
It's an absolutely amazing statistic, and I'm pretty sure that's where it comes from. I think it comes from that PBS special. If you can't find it, let me know. I think I may still have a link somewhere on where I got that DVD. But look on Amazon. That's where I usually look. It's probably where you'll find it. Just look for a DVD on Happiness Advantage.
Great. Thank you. Yeah.
Really just, I have become such an advocate of Sean and his work, especially because of that stat. Because I think that stat is, that stat addresses so many aspects of human life, so many different areas where there are problems, so many different challenges that people have, because it applies in every area of life where you're looking to have some level of success. Doesn't that be financial? It could be relationship. It could be health. It could be career. It could be hobbies. It could be almost anything. Name whatever it is that you want. That's going to drive it. It's going to be how connected are you?
It's your relationship to, again, back to what you two are all about. It's your relationship to what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
And and what you put between yourself and that, isn't it? Yeah.
And one of the reasons, I've been exploring this a lot lately. Why is it so successful? Why did that study produce a 0.7 correlation? And I think a large portion of it is an obvious one. We would all kind of identify when your things are down, when you're not feeling good, you need somebody to help, work things through. And that's where a good friend can be really, really helpful. But it also helps in other ways that are not as easy to spot. For instance, this one's going to be fairly easy for people to identify with to some degree. Networking has been a thing for generations long before the internet came along. Networking is a way to build a business or to get yourself advanced in a career or something like that. How many people can you interact with? Well, the best networkers are the ones who are the most successful. I think we all kind of realize that. The ones who are the best at networking just get wherever they want in life. And so really, the whole social connection thing is a reminder to ourselves, if we are willing to get out of our comfort zone spaces and get out there into the world in whatever way we can, especially now with the internet, that makes it so much easier.
Mm-hmm.
If we're willing to do that, mm-hmm. we can actually create the connections that we need that will, in ways we can't even see yet,
yeah.
get us to where we want to go.
Very nice. Yeah. Because
which
it's
is powerful.
Energy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's how I built LOA today.
Yeah.
I was telling you the story before I got going. Listeners yeah. know this one, so I won't go through it in detail, but I started in 2012 because I didn't have any money. I couldn't afford to buy a coach. I couldn't afford a book, but I needed to understand this stuff. So I figured I'd start a podcast so I can get people to come onto the show and explain this stuff to me. And what it ended up doing was creating an online social network for me. I mean, some of my best friends are online, people like Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
People who've come mm-hmm. into my life and taught me, you know, this aspect or that aspect of this overall topic, and in the process become great friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as they become great friends, I find myself feeling empowered in ways I didn't feel 10 years ago. I felt lost. Totally lost. I was like floundering, it wasn't even keeping my head above water. It was trying to keep my head, get my head to the surface of the water. That's how bad it was at that point. And just doing this activity, doing this show, has completely turned my life around. Completely turned it around.
Radical act.
It is.
You know,
it was.
I mean, yeah. Yeah, good for you. Yeah.
I mean, it's no wonder I keep saying how much I love doing this show.
No kidding.
Yeah.
No kidding. I mean, there's never a lousy show, I'm sure, because it's all this wonderful discovery, this journey of bringing it forward.
And that's the mindset right there. That's mm-hmm. it right there. You just summarized it beautifully. It's treating it as a wonderful journey instead of a horrible hellhole.
I think that's hilarious. But it's true.
It's true. Yeah. But I know what you mean. Because when you're in the horrible hellhole, this does seem like it's so ridiculous. Yeah. There's no way that's going to happen. That's the way it feels.
Yeah.
But the funny thing is when you make this
helpful,
perspective is huge. And learning how to shift perspective makes all the difference. And that's where the social connections come in.
That's right.
You have somebody else to reinforce that. It makes it easier to make those shifts.
Yes, it does. And also, Jay, just have perspective that what you're into, what your problems are big to you. And other people also have big problems. You know, it's
absolutely.
Like, you know, we're all. Yeah.
So this perspective thing and the mindset thing, that's why it becomes an ongoing topic around here. Because mindset drives everything.
Well, it's the one thing we have some control over, isn't it?
We have a lot of control. We have a lot more control over our lives than we realize.
I just said some, but I, you know.
We have a ton of control.
Yeah.
I'm still learning what my control is.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm looking at one of my best teachers right there. Daniel's been teaching me all kinds of stuff about control.
And
I value every step along the way. And I've been able to share that with listeners too. And they've been learning about control, but we really have an amazing amount of control over our lives. Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's certain things we don't control. Certainly events happen, things happen to us and so forth. But referring back to my friend Joel, one of the things that he used to hammer on over and over and over again is we may not be able to control what happens to us, but we have every control over what our response is.
Yeah.
And that's big.
Mm-hmm.
That's really, really big because your response actually can change the entire storyline.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Well, of course, you have to kind of know that option's there.
Which is another reason for all those social connections.
Another reason for social connections in community.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's huge. It's really, really huge. It's very, very important. So this is very interesting, though, what you're doing, because literally you just said it very nicely. You're creating this awareness so that you can help people develop the community that they need. So you're almost doing intuitively what Sean was teaching, which is great.
Yeah. You know, I think it keeps it really fresh for me, too. I mean, the script is now at a place where, I mean, we're not going to be trying to fix anything there. The story, we feel really good about that. And what I really want to do now is just keep rolling out this whole thing as we, you know, as we meet with our funders and we explain to them that we have this grassroots thing we're going to be doing, which is really supporting at a grassroots level these programs and doing these screenings and
that feels really good to me. You know, I mean, yeah, we can, we'll go to con. Yeah, for sure. We'll go try to get into con. But also I know we are going to create a film that's going to have a beautiful, inspirational story. And from that, a lot of dialogue can happen and, you know, things can shift for people there. And so, yeah, it's really life cool. is good. It's great. We've got, I love our director, you know, we've got a tremendous actress just signed on and, a wonderful TV actress is wonderful girls. We got the script right now. So we'll hear.
It's exciting. Okay. But when you're in the middle of creating something like this, that must be really exciting. Cause you're the only ones who actually see what's going on. The public doesn't see that, of course. It's part of the, what happens behind the curtain, so to speak.
It's
a sausage making, right. But you're living that step-by-step journey that we were talking about. You're living that day-to-day journey. And that's the fun part. That's where there's real joy in all this thing.
It is. And also, though, I'm curious, Daniel, to hear what you have to think, what you have to say about having that, changing that mindset from someone who's felt like a victim or has been victimized. What would you say? What are powerful words that you're, from your experience?
And so, the unconscious operates at 10,000 to 10 million times the speed of the conscious mind. And what a lot of people try and do is they try and have a fight with the unconscious, which is where the behaviors that run our life come from most of the time, as much as 97% of the time, to give some more numbers and following Walt. And so people have this victim mentality and don't realize it's actually not a victim mentality. It's a victim state of being or a victim identity that they're holding.
Okay.
And from that same space, that same level of mind, that same level of identity, that same narrative or story they're running on, they try and fight it to do something different. And what ends up happening is, they lose. They end up seeing more evidence to support the story that they've got and nothing really changes. Or maybe they make a bit of headway and then something comes up and they go back to that validating the narrative that they have. And so what I advocate from my own experience has been changing the environment, which is what's feeding into the narrative that we're holding, feeding into the reaffirming of identity to match the new identity that you have. So who are the people around you? Are the people around you affirming your victim narrative, either as a persecutor or a supportive of your victim story? What is your environment reinforcing? Are you still got mental anchors and triggers that remind you of things that did victimize you or people that did victimize you? If that's happening, then you're never going to be able to break free from that identity. So it's changing the environment to support the new story and then being fully committed to choosing that new story over and over and over again until the unconscious accepts the new narrative, in which case you'll no longer be a victim anymore because there's no space for that story within you.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
You can see why I've learned so much from this guy. I mean, seriously, he's got it down pat.
And that was, and I know, thank you, Will, but I learned that myself, accidentally talking myself out of suicide.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah. I know they just went, what? I was so committed to taking my own life that I decided I am going to stop being a loser so that I can succeed at suicide. But all of the books and everything that I was reading, yeah, I know it makes no sense, but it makes sense. All the books that I was reading, all the tapes that I was listening to, everything that I was immersing myself in was positive. And so my mindset changed because I was positively polluting myself with nothing other than that.
Right.
And so I woke up several years later and realized, hang on a minute, I've got a kind of kick-ass life and I don't think about suicide all the time anymore. And that's when I realized that the environment had created the change. And so that built into what's now my my Beyond Intention paradigm. And we support people in creating a state of being, choices, feelings, thoughts, and actions that lead to abundance. And when they have that, they can apply it to anything. They come and learn how to do it with money, and then they end up doing it with their health, or they end up doing it with their relationships, or doing it with their happiness. Because it's the same formula. It's the same formula all the time. What we're experiencing is an exact playing out of who and what we are on the inside.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you do it through workshops? How do you present?
So I have programs, I have workshops, we have materials, I've got books, and mm-hmm. obviously I have opportunities like this to share with people serving mm-hmm. alongside Walt and Alex and mm-hmm. the gang. But ultimately, what I love to do is encourage people to understand what is going to be the most effective for you. Not everybody's going to learn from a workshop. Not everybody's going to learn from a coach. Not everyone's going to learn from a healer. Everyone has their own unique journey that they're going on. And when you have sufficient agency and knowledge of self, you can identify what the route is to be for you.
Right. What if you're someone who's been in prison? Mm-hmm. What how does that change at all your program? If you're
of course it does.
It does.
But everyone's got their own situations. And as long as you've got one thing up on a pedestal that this is the big thing that's going to be in the way of me getting anywhere, then that's going to be the big thing that's going to be in the way of getting you anywhere.
Yeah. Okay. And then with the, would you say then the program that you're offering is it a months at a time? Is it weeks at a time? How does it take hold? How does it all matter?
In terms of the specific things that I offer?
Yeah. I'm just curious because
We've got things for a day. We've got things for a weekend. We've got things for a few hours. We've got things mm-hmm. for a year. We've got things yeah. for as long as you need.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Oh, it's because it's wonderful because it is challenging on every level for people mm-hmm. to reassemble and restructure what they want and how they're going to go about it.
One of the things that Daniel has talked about a lot, and he kind of alluded to it there for just a moment, was how he had been in this place where he was thinking about the suicide, but he had been just overwhelming himself with positive influences. He'd been reading books, and been listening to people, and yeah. so on and so forth. And it was just one positive influence after another. Mm-hmm. And the way he says it reminds me of another co-host. His name is Louis D'Souza. He does the Monday show with me. And Louis likes to really emphasize, instead of trying to fix what's wrong, overflow it with what's right. Overflow it with all the things that you prefer, that feel better, that work for you, that change your perspective, that give you a better thing, and you'll just kind of wash the rest of it away, just because you're overwhelming it with all of this positivity. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what Daniel did. He overwhelmed he had this thing going on. It was going on for quite some time. Like he said, he was thinking about suicide, and he kind of overwhelmed it with all the positivity. It was like a flow, an ocean flow of all.
Whatever
this
the dominant energy is going to win.
Yeah,
it's not mm-hmm. complicated.
No,
it's and this not, is this is, it? Is this is the thing. It's not complicated, but it's challenging because change requires us letting go of who we are, and to mm-hmm. the greatest extent, we're all addicted to the role that we're playing out. We're all addicted to the story that we're playing out. It's just some of us get the opportunity to get a new addiction that's empowering. We're all in a space of addiction.
It's just
whether the addiction is empowering or not. Someone's right. addicted to exercise. Are you going to send them to Exercise Anonymous? No, you're not, because it's empowering.
Right? Hopefully
yeah,
not.
Yeah. Yeah,
someone's addicted to being happy. You're not going to send them to Happy Anonymous. Oh, no, I'm Daniel and I'm a happy holic.
Just send him to LOA Today. He can become a guest.
But every single one of these experiences are triggering a set of chemicals and hormones flooding through the body. And the brain gets addicted to that and therefore supports you in playing out actions, habits, and behaviors that's going to generate more of that. Mm-hmm. So a successful person is addicted to the payoff of success, and therefore their mind unconsciously sabotages them against anything that doesn't lead to those outcomes. That's what happens. That's it. Winners are addicted to winning. You ask any leading athlete, they're addicted to being out there. I remember I saw this interview with Arnold Schwarzenegger, when he was talking about his early career.
Yeah.
He's like, pardon the grossness of it. It's like, he said, I was in love with working out. The pain was like, I was coming. That's how he referred to it. It was like an orgasm for him. The pain of working out. He became addicted to that. And that's how he became 7 times Mr. Olympia, and then took that and took that same power, that mm-hmm. same addiction to success, applied it to the film industry. Mm-hmm. He's applied it to business. He applied it to politics.
Yes.
And he will always win because that's who he is. His identity is that of a successful person. The challenge for those of us that are in victimhood is that identity is tied up in the addiction to the chemicals and hormones that we get from our victim story being affirmed.
Got it.
And you also said something really interesting about 2 weeks ago when we had Robert Riopole on. Robert's also, like Daniel, very financially successful. And so I had the two of them kind of sharing more stories about, you know, what they went through to become successful. And when I asked Daniel to tell his story, I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember one theme that kept coming up over and over again. He said, well, I went through a lot of pain, and then I went through this growth, and then I went through pain. And did I mention pain?
Oh,
because it was part of that ongoing narrative. But the way Daniel thought about pain was very different from the way other people felt about pain and thought about pain. You didn't think about pain as something that stopped you.
No, pain is just a signal that you're at a point of growth. There's a separation between pain and suffering. Suffering is a story that I make about pain. Pain is just a signal that something's changing.
Yeah.
That's it. If you have a headache, it's a signal that you need to rest, you need water, you need to get out of the sun. You can honor the signal, or you can be in suffering and generate a story about it and talk about, oh, my God, my head hurts. Drink some water, then you're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. When our body's growing, we have growing pains. Mm-hmm. When my wife was screaming, giving birth to my son, there was birth pains. Something wonderful was happening. Did she make a story about it? No, that would have distracted her from being in the process of birthing new life. When we're in the process of birthing a new life for ourselves, there will be pain. There's no overcoming that. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't have to lead to suffering. It can just be a signal that it's time to celebrate, that more growth is on the way.
I got it. I love that. I really love that. I remember I started running marathons later in my life, you know, and I was already in my mid-40s. And so I had not had that kind of coaching, athletic coaching prior to that, to understand the level of pain that you're going to go through when you're running a marathon. And it's really great because I understood, I started to understand that the pain was physical pain, and it wasn't, I didn't have to suffer about being in pain. it was a choice I made. You decided to train. This is part of it. Your muscles hurt. Yeah. Good for you. You know, so I try my, I love what you had to say. I think there's pain or suffering around, like it shouldn't be painful. Just that it shouldn't be painful. I mean, I shouldn't be feeling pain at all. I shouldn't be suffering. I mean, and then we suffer more because, you know, now you must be doing it wrong.
Oh no. What have I done? I'm in pain.
But so Daniel, was there a moment when you decided that you were going to put that thought or that plan aside and you were going to live?
Nope. It's still a conversation that I continue to have, but I'm resourced to have that conversation from a very different place within myself.
Yeah.
It happens very, very rarely now, but it does still happen. And this is the thing as well. Memories sit in the body, and triggers and anchors to things sit in the body.
Yeah.
Someone who's overcome being a victim, anything can trigger you back to being a victim, but are you resourced to face down that opportunity to go back into the past and move forward instead?
Yeah.
What are you going to choose to do?
Powerful stuff.
Yeah, it is. It is because, lays it at in front of people. It's your choice. It's your choice.
The really interesting thing too is when you lay it in front of somebody who has been through what we often call a dark night of the soul, which is essentially what somebody going through prison has done. They've had like the ultimate dark night of the soul. How'd you describe it in that book title, Going Through Hell or something like that? When you've been in that place, you are very receptive to a message that says you have a choice. You're probably more receptive than you've ever been previously in your life, because you've reached a new level of low and you want to be out of that level so bad. And you're willing to do almost anything. Because that's really what the mindset change is all about. It's being willing to make the change.
You do have to get there, don't you?
You do. Yeah.
You have to get there. You have to get there.
Some of us just require more triggering than others.
and then, like you said, to fail, it meaning going back to prison is so unacceptable that, but we all are in our, I mean, we too obviously are very evolved gentlemen, but
the rest of us, we have prisons in our minds.
Hey, let me tell you, I'm living with my prisons every day, and I'm learning how to open the prison doors every single day. I mean, this is ongoing.
Yeah, it's yeah.
It doesn't stop. It gets easier.
Yes. Yeah, I think I get kinder. You know, and it's like, oh yeah, well, okay. Come on. I did want to mention that we had a book club.
Yes, I wanted to get to that, and you that's where that book came into it. Yeah, let's.
Do you mind?
We got a few minutes left. Let's talk about it briefly.
Okay, let's talk. AngelLadyMovie.com sponsors Angel Lady Movie Talk every other week on Fridays, and we are going to be having a live talk with the people who are carrying on the work that this woman started. We are going to be first talking about the book, about what's in the book, and about Sue Ellen Allen and her journey, 7 years in the federal prison in Perrysville, what she realized and what she shares now that is news. I mean, it's kind of eye-opening material. So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to be talking about this incredible program that Sue Ellen invented when she got out of prison, because she's a teacher, and she created a program called Reimagining Reentry. And what it is people who don't have, who have never had any experience with the system, it's kind of like a workshop, and they're given a certain amount of money, and they're getting a certain amount of things to do. It's kind of like Monopoly, but this is actually what people are going through. Like, don't pass go. You've got to pay for this. You've got to take care of this. You don't have any money. You've got to get bus fare. You've got to go get your driver's license. You've got to go back in for a test. You've got to meet your probation officer. All of these circumstances that are all the weight that's put on people to help people understand the challenges. And it's like a 3 or 4 hour workshop. So the person who's, Sue Ellen has passed away. She had cancer in prison. She had some great years after she got out, and now she's passed away. But the person who's carrying on her program, Reimagining Reality, is going to be there to talk about Sue Ellen Allen and about the book and about the program. And that's
so again, how do people find out about that if they're interested?
Angel, Sherry at angelladymovie.com.
Ah, okay.
Sherry, Sherry at angelladymovie.com. Email me and we'll loop you in if this is something that piques your interest.
And I'll make sure we include that in the show notes so that when people are listening to the podcast recording, they can go find it very
thank
easily.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you all. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for coming on and telling your story about this interesting movie you guys have been working on. And do you guys have any concept at this point? I mean, you're kind of in early stages, but what's the projected release date so people know what to look forward to?
Well, if we do the pre-production starts, real prep starts right after Labor Day. Shoot starts October 15th, and then it's about 9 months after that the film is ready.
You're kind of aiming for like next summer or something like that.
Well, yeah, we're aiming to get ready to be ready in May, you know, to show it.
May 2023.
Yeah. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
Yeah. Next year.
It'll come sooner than you expect. That's the way it works in the movie industry for sure.
Yeah. There's always lots to do. So. Yeah.
Well, thanks again for sharing your story. Thank you very much for being with us. And
thank you. Thank you. Great to meet you, Daniel.
These are tough topics, but they're topics that also are important because they help us understand one more way we really are empowered. And so thank you for being willing to share the story so that we could explore that.
This was great. This was fun. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you, Daniel. Thank you to our podcast listeners everywhere. We will see you all next time here on LOA Today. Goodbye, everybody.